welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte, and this week I'm not joined by my lovely co-host, Emma Bunnell. I am joined by Claire Pearsall, who is a Conservative, and we thought we'd change it up a bit. So hello, Claire.
Hi, how you doing?
So before we kick off, tell us a little bit about yourself, where listeners might have seen you before as well.
I've spent the last 20 years in Parliament working for a number of Conservative MPs, but for the last 13 years, I've worked for Caroline Noakes, who is current chair of the Women and Equalities Select Committee. I also spent some time at the Home Office as Caroline's special advisor.
Are you feeling okay? Have you recovered?
Just about. Do you know what? It was amazing.
Has she recovered?
I don't think so. It was going to take some time.
Yeah, that's what everyone that ever goes into and leaves the Home Office says.
It is. But, I mean, it's the most amazing place. Very, very stressful. And you're on chaos and crisis mode from the get-go every single morning. And it doesn't get any better throughout the day.
Yeah. And I get the impression with the Home Office, actually, there's a couple of things that always happen. It seems also a bit like the health department, that it's a sort of a bit of a poison chalice to get it. But also everyone that leaves the Home Office comes out with a lot of praise for the civil servants there who busted a gut in a very difficult department and sort of just see the barriers in such a difficult system.
Yeah, and I think it's when you understand what you're actually dealing with, because people just see government departments as this blob, as we keep being told.
Yes, the blob.
But there are some incredibly courageous people in there. There are some hardworking people, knowledgeable. I learned so much from people who said that they knew next to nothing. I mean, they are so modest about what they can do and the abilities that they have, that I think it's a real shame that everybody gets lumped in with this criticism, because they were some of the most diligent people I think I've ever worked with.
Yeah, and as I say, you're not the first, and you won't be the last former kind of special advisor in most departments that say things like that, and it's always worth bearing in mind. You can tell me the gossip from your time in government and actually your time now dealing with a very interesting beat in terms of select committees. But we obviously have to start properly the show over in the Middle East. I didn't really want to talk about this, not because it's not an important issue, but because I find it so personally distressing. Like many British Jews, I spent most of last Saturday, Sunday, frankly, some of this week, checking on friends in Israel. I think people were only starting now to realise that we all, one way or the other, have a connection. Most of us here in the UK are only a step or two away from someone that has been directly affected by the atrocities that took place in Israel on Saturday morning. It's been, for once, quite, I don't know if uplifting is the word, it's been quite important to see most of the political spectrum come together in solidarity, which always makes a change when it comes to Israel. I attended that vigil at Whitehall on Monday night, heard David Lammy speak, who was very impressive. I heard Sir Ed Davey speak, who was very impressive. Ian Duncan Smith was there. There were other speakers. I got there a little bit later, so I probably missed some other people as well. But the speakers I did hear from across the political spectrum, as I say, were very impressive. It was a test for Labour as well, and I think mostly they passed it. And I think Sir Keir Starmer has done well. And I want to take a moment, because I often criticise him on this show, but I want to take a moment of praise for Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, who realised that people in the heart of his city were really hurting. Obviously, there's a very big Jewish community across London, particularly in northwest London. And he turned up in Golders Green and went to a kosher restaurant there. He has led from the front in London. I think it's worth remembering that all the times that I criticise him, that he is in a very, very difficult, very distressing moment, has stepped up. Obviously, the world has come together on this against terrorism. We'll see what happens in the days to come. But yeah, it's just been a horrendously, horrendously distressing week that doesn't seem to be coming to a conclusion. Claire, I don't expect you to provide deep analysis of the Middle East, but you were saying just off air how sort of disturbing you'd found the scenes we saw as well.
Well, that's right. I don't have a direct personal connection, but to see the images coming out and for the Jewish people in Israel to almost have to provide proof that it's happened, I have found really, really distressing and really depressing that they have to prove something. When you can see from eyewitness accounts, social media in this case is very good at getting information out very, very quickly. And I think that our understanding of a situation builds from that. And it's incredibly sad to see that Jewish schools have closed today because they don't want their pupils to be unsafe. They're worried they might be identified as Jewish, walking along the streets, have been told to remove blazers. That's in this country. And I think the worry I have is this spilling out of anger, hatred, and division moves across the entire world when you see this. So yes, it is absolutely, as you say, it's heartwarming to see chief political figures coming together to condemn Hamas, rightly so. But I think that some people who don't understand the situation are commenting on it in such a negative way that it stokes up hatred in other ways. And I think that we are about to see what happens with that, with this anger, with this bubbling up. And I think that nobody.
Yeah. Yeah, just a couple more things. First of all, I think the FA should be ashamed of themselves that they can't. Yeah. They're the only British organisation that hasn't been able to step up as usual. Yeah. And we should also say that Hamas are, Palestinian civilians, Palestinian children are going to suffer and do suffer day in, day out because of Hamas, because of this terrorist organisation. And to see the suffering of Palestinian children, to see Palestinian civilians of all age, frankly, to see that is, gut-wrenching.
And I think that's the difficulty with the conversation, is that you can absolutely support Israel with their right to defend, but you can also feel incredible empathy with civilian citizens within Palestine, children, men, women of all ages, who are caught up in this. You can absolutely have those views, but unfortunately, the polarization that happens is that if you express your concern for Palestinian individuals who are caught up in it, you are suddenly deemed to be on the side of Hamas, which isn't right. And
Hamas are not on the side of their own civilians. So
absolutely. And they are horrendous. And they are taking water pipes, making bombs. They are cutting their own people off. And they don't care about their well-being. And I think that has to be said. And I just don't like this distinction that you cannot support Israel and innocent civilians of Palestine at the same time.
The seeds are horrendous, and I fear, I think we know what will happen over the coming days. And all I will say to wrap this up is, as we're finishing this show, we're seeing the Israeli government asking Palestinian civilians to leave Gaza. Now, I appreciate there's a very serious conversation to be had about what that actually looks like. Whereas Hamas are telling civilians to stay.
Yeah.
And I think I will leave it there. Let's head away from the Middle East and head first to Manchester. Because as we say, you are a Conservative. You've been active and worked in the Conservative Party for a long time. And, what did you make of Manchester, Claire?
Well, when you start watching something, I wasn't there. I didn't have to go this time. I have done many, many years of conference and I don't feel the need to attend now. But it was just chaotic. That's the only word I've really got for it. There are so many different factions within the Conservative Party, which was only made even more evident at conference when each one of them had their own little sort of mini manifesto launch.
Yes.
And you think if you are trying to get back into government the next time round, surely you need to have a united front. You need to be, fighting one agenda together to prove to the country that you deserve to be considered to lead it. And that wasn't there. So this sort of breakdown of collective responsibility, people just going off script, I've never seen that happen to this extent previously. And I've been to a number of conferences, the Theresa May conference, where everything seemed to go wrong for her speech. I was at that and it still didn't feel as chaotic.
Where the stage collapsed around her.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was nobody used some very strong glue, did they? And I think they've learned from that, and they now just have things projected behind people rather than stuck to a curtain.
Yes, yes. It did seem, well, Emma and I were sort of laughing last week at the idea that you head to Manchester in a to a conference in a disused railway station to then cancel a train, a high-speed train line between Birmingham and Manchester.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. The optics were a thing.
They were, and this, the really bad thing about this is, like, we could all see on Sunday from the initial interviews done, the media round on the Sunday morning with the Prime Minister and Sky News, BBC, whoever else, they absolutely confirmed that no decision had been taken about HS2. And you sort of think, you could see it unravelling right in front of your eyes. Yeah. And I think we all knew that this wasn't going to happen. It, things had been leaked out, but it was just this a doubling down of, no, we're making no decision, we're strong, we're here to support everybody. And then a couple of days later to go, oh, actually, look at me, I've made a decision, I'm very strong. And it's like, but you could have done this previously. You could have actually started the conference that way and led on a front foot, but now you're just chasing up, and it never works.
Yeah, you raise an interesting topic that we often discuss here, but I'm interested on your perspective as a Conservative. It seems, as a sort of outsider to the party looking in, that, you know, Rishi Sunak is a man that does have talent. Like, he's obviously a smart guy. He's been, you know, quite an effective technocrat at different points, when, particularly when he was in the Treasury. He's not very good at politics, though, is he?
No, and that's always the sort of really confusing aspect, that somebody has managed to get themselves elected as a member of parliament. They have gone through the ranks, junior minister, to end up as chancellor, which is an extremely senior position.
At a very young age.
At a very young age, not very much experience within parliament. But to not have the sort of almost innate sense of how this is going to look and who you need to be on side, you need to be working sort of 5 or 6 steps ahead at all times. I'm not saying it's an easy job. Politics is very, very difficult, but a lot of it is about just managing your troops around you and looking and seeing where the traps are going to fall. So I question his political judgment, but also the political judgment of those people around him. Now, he has a number of advisors, a number of other MPs. Why didn't any of them sort of stand up to him and just go, hang on a minute, this isn't going to work, and this is how it's going to look?
Yeah, I sort of spent a lot of last weekend, well, weekend before last now, texting people at the conference being like, this is sabotage, isn't it? Someone's gone after him here. They can't be so incapable that they've actually blown this up in this way. And everyone was just like, meh, bit bizarre.
And I think that's the thing. Everybody was just sort of going, oh, yeah, we don't really know. Because I was also texting people at the conference just going, please tell me that there's a plan to this. This is all meant to happen. And they were just like, yeah, no idea. And brilliant. It was almost like people had just sort of given up with it. And I find that is quite disturbing when you're potentially 12 months out from a general election, that you cannot put together a coherent plan, a set of policies, sensible policies at that, and just put a message of something positive out there. It's a very confused government, because we appear to be banning everything, which is just profoundly unconservative. Yeah. And you sort of think, but what's wrong with A-levels? You're creating something that you don't need to create, that's not going to come in for at least 10 years anyway, and you're putting it out as some kind of triumph. I just don't understand.
Yeah, it was somewhat bizarre. Just as general, before we move on, what is the vibe in the Conservative Party at the moment that you're picking up? How are people feeling within the party?
I think it's very split. I mean, currently we're on recess, so everybody is in their constituencies.
Which is always dangerous for a Prime Minister.
It's very, very dangerous, because they are going to look at what they can do to ensure that they get the best for their constituents, that they're out there meeting people because they want to be re-elected. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you want to look at what information is going out there. And if I was the Prime Minister, having a load of people essentially going rogue and putting out the messages they want, I would be quite worried as to sort of how fractured the party really was. So I think generally, I think people are keeping their heads down and they're trying to work incredibly hard in the constituencies. And I don't think that going back to Parliament next week, as we do, is going to be particularly happy.
No, because if you've spent a couple of weeks hearing from your constituents how fed up they are with everything, that tends to be
rather dangerous.
It tends to be rather dangerous for an already under pressure Prime Minister. All right, let's jump over now to Liverpool, where the vibe at the Labour conference seemed totally, totally different. And let's hear from the ground from Emma.
So I've just finished hosting a watch party for Keir Starmer's speech with Fabians. And even in this room, that is a good 10-minute walk from the hall, we actually were over capacity. We had to turn people away. There was apparently a huge scrum at the door at one point. And there was a standing ovation at the end of the speech. They standing ovation for the television, which is quite extraordinary. And I think that tells you everything you need to know about what the atmosphere has been like at conference. Obviously, the start of the conference and throughout has been overshadowed by the appalling, appalling events in Israel. And it's been very interesting because obviously it's like a dual conference. There's shock and horror at the same time as optimism and joy. So all conversations kind of go in both directions at once, and it can be quite confusing. But on the other hand, we are here to do a particular thing. And my God, the Labour Party have done that well this week. Walking around the hall, I've never seen so many lobbyists in suits, at least certainly not in the last 20 years. And I just feel like it's not job done in terms of winning the next election, but it's job very, very nearly done. You know, certainly the job of this conference was done and done well. Absolute star of the conference has been Michael Shanks, who has been having a very, very victorious victory tour, speaking at everyone's reception alongside Anas Sawa, who is just a very, very impressive politician. In terms of Keir's speech, I thought the content was superb, but more than that, I thought the theme running throughout of sort of British people having each other's backs, whether that be, you know, the English and the Scots having each other's backs, or, you know, just all of us understanding that sense of social solidarity. That for me, you know, I loved a lot of the policy ideas, housing, obviously, in particular, because that's been a passion of mine for a long time. But more importantly than that, it was just that, like, in comparison to Rishi, he had a theme, he had a vision. It felt like, you know, this is a sense of optimism, not just about whether Labour can win, but whether Labour can make a difference when they win. And I think that's something that might be a little bit new.
Right, so she's obviously feeling pretty good about life. It seemed like Labour were feeling pretty good about life. It's hard to play. I mean, I watched Keir Starmer's speech. First of all, let's deal with the thing, the big thing at the beginning. I was shocked when the guy got on stage. More than that, I was shocked how long it took security to get to Sir Keir Starmer. That is really, really poor. He is the leader of the opposition. He's a very, very senior politician. He has obviously a personal security detail. It is absolutely outrageous. Not only that can someone get to the stage, but they can be, you know, literally grabbing on to the leader of the opposition for what, 30 seconds or more?
Yeah. And I think that that's a real concern, that security around politicians of any party needs to be looked at. We don't want to stop people from having contact with their MP. But I think in something like this, when you have to be security cleared to go to a conference in the first place, everybody has ID with them. It just beggars belief that nobody saw this individual walking towards the stage. Because when you look at a conference hall, there are only sort of one or two ways that you can ever get to a stage. And a number of cameras and journalists are going to be in your way. So how did nobody notice that some individual was just sort of wandering aimlessly
towards the stage.
Towards the stage. And yeah. I felt very sorry for Sir Keir Starmer, and I thought he handled it extremely well, because it might only be glitter, as everybody says, but he didn't know that. When something is thrown at you,
yes, quite right,
you don't know what that is.
That could have been powder of some description. It could have been anything.
It could have been anything at all. And he did very well.
He did. But let's be really blunt about this. Yes, it was glitter. We know what happens when it's a knife.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen it. We have seen it in recent memory. And I think that's really sad that nobody had thought about the security on the stage of a senior politician who was there standing on his own. It's not as if he had a group of people around him where you can jostle. He was there on his own and a sitting duck. And I think that we need to review security arrangements at conference and for MPs in general.
Yeah. I have a little bit of sort of personal experience of this, because attending the Liberal Democrat conference for many years, there was a very big noticeable difference from the years of opposition and, you know, some years of insignificance to the first time the Liberal Democrats were in power at conference. And in typical Liberal Democrat fashion, there was a bit of a upset and a fury about this, that people were requiring photo ID and police vetting, and you had to go through airport security to get in once the Liberal Democrats were in power. And you can get that, but, you know, just because you're not, he's the leader of the opposition, it should be the same. And we need to take the security of our senior, frankly, politicians of all kind, because Joe Cox and Sir David Amess were not senior politicians. And we need to take the security politician of all politicians of all time. But obviously the senior people are going to be much more high profile targets, and it needs to be sorted. But so you're right to say that Sir Keir Starmer handled it well. I thought that image of him kind of rolling up his sleeves, taking a jacket, rolling up his sleeves, President Bartlett style in the West Wing.
It kind of makes you look back to the days of John Prescott. Do you remember when he was egged out on the campaign trail and he famously turned around and punched the individual back? And I did think for
he was very restrained. I'm not sure I'd have been as...
No, me neither.
Restrained as him.
I think I would have been a shrieking banshee at that point.
Yes. His speech, I thought, it was certainly well delivered, and he's got better at those things. He really, really has. Substance, I think people will like the big picture stuff. I thought he delivered that very well. I think there is a reasonable argument to start being made that they're still not quite tying down specifics. There were specific policies announced at Labour conference. Let's not be disingenuous. And there, I also don't expect him at this stage in October 2023 to be reading out his manifesto on stage.
Yeah, I think there are sort of two threads of the arguments with this. Is that, yes, it was much better in delivery. It was packed full of ideas. Now, the problem is that you're right. You don't expect somebody to essentially launch what is going to be their manifesto at a party conference 12 months away. I think detail is lacking. I'm not convinced there was anything particularly new that came out. We already heard...
There was a tower stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that some of this had already been around in Labour circles. And when you speak to some Labour MPs, these are the kind of things that they've always spoken about and always wanted. I mean, there's little detail.
Yeah, but to be fair, so they hadn't announced that as a firm policy. And they're obviously, these Labour new towns are one of the things in terms of the focus on house building throughout the conference. That was one of the big themes.
And I absolutely commend them for mentioning house building, because that was one thing that was severely lacking at the Conservative conference. Was house building. And surely this has got to be right up there on the agenda. We all need somewhere to live. We understand that there aren't enough houses, whether it be social housing, private rented, purchased houses. We need a variety and we need more of them. And I think successive governments have always failed with house building. But I want to see a little bit of detail around this sort of new towns and taking green belts. As somebody that has sat on a local authority and also lives in an area with, you know, 93% green belt, I would be slightly concerned as to how that was going to work and local democracy, how are they feeding into this process? So those are really sort of technical details. But on the
surface, this is a NIMBY free zone, Claire, on this show. We won't be having any NIMBYs.
House building. I'm not opposed to house building. What I want is the actual proper sized properties that we require. And that's always what I find is developers want to put up 5-bedroom executive homes when your need in an area is maybe 2 or 3-bedroom homes with a garden, not apartments.
Yes, to let. Yeah, or some places you need more higher buildings.
And absolutely. Higher density in towns and cities absolutely works. In the countryside where I live, it's low rise, so you can have low rise apartment buildings, but also people just want smaller homes. People want to be able to downsize to a 2-bedroom, maybe upsize to a 3-bedroom. They don't need 4, 5 or 6.
Or buy their first 2-bedroom. Which
absolutely, absolutely.
Issue.
Or an elderly person who's coming out of a family home who wants to downsize to maybe a bungalow.
Yeah, which is also good for people who want to upsize. Anyway,
yeah.
Let's stick on the Labour conference because, look, Emma's told me off before on this show for calling the Labour Party smug and assuming sort of the presumptuousness that they're going to be in government. Now, it's very hard to see anything other than a Labour government next time around. They're obviously getting, with every week and month that passes, they're getting increasingly confident. You know, we even saw Mark Carney endorsing Rachel Reeves, which was quite a moment. There is a real sense of confidence within the party. And I still think people have to be careful not to underestimate the size of the task that they require to get at least even a majority government. Never mind. Okay. Probably one way or the other, Sir Keir Starmer will be the next prime minister. But to get a majority, and never mind a working majority that can get stuff done, is a huge task. As I keep repeating, it needs 126 new MPs for a majority of one.
Yeah, and none of it is impossible. I think it is a stretch. And I think that we all have to be a little bit careful at running away with this is it, they now look like a party. Because yes, they were slick at conference, they looked comfortable, they stood up there as if they meant business, which is impressive to see. But outside of political circles, you need to look at what's going on in the rest of the country. And are they offering to the public enough of an alternative? So if people don't like the Conservatives, and there are a lot of people who don't like Conservatives right at the moment, are they going to be persuaded that Sir Keir Starmer and his shadow cabinet are the right alternative? It's not as clear cut as it was in sort of 96, 97. You don't have that feeling of a government in waiting yet. That's not to say they can't get there, but I think it's going to take a seismic shift to get a landslide of 97 proportions.
Yeah, I think, and of course they don't need such a landslide. They just need to get into a government and build from there. And I did think this was the first time it did have that government in feel waiting. Waiting in feel.
No, it did. They were slick. They were well briefed. Their media appearances were very good. They didn't seem to sort of come a cropper on any of the difficult questions that you get asked on these kind of media rounds. And they were coherent with their messaging. And also they all had the same script to keep to.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing, which is what I was saying about the Conservative conference. That collective responsibility seemed to have just died out. And Labour seemed to have had it now, whereas they haven't in the past. So that was an interesting sort of shift. I'm not sure at the moment. I think the country wants a change, but it really is up to Labour now to prove that they are the change that people need. And that's for them to do.
Yeah. And I do think it's always hard to judge, right, with these conferences, how much quote unquote normal people are taking in.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, who is really paying attention? Is the only thing that people have got from the whole of conference season is an image of Sir Keir Starmer covered in glitter? It might well be. But for the people, first of all, the people that do pay attention, I think, will have been impressed by that leader's speech by what they saw from Labour. I think they will have been.
Yeah.
Whether or not I feel the same is irrelevant. I think as a general rule, it looked good. I think there is... I think people can tell when they turn on their TVs, if they flick on the TV news for a little bit or watch a Sunday morning programme in the background or something, you can tell like who is on the up and who is on the down. And there's only, I think it's quite obvious whether I like it or not, that the Labour Party has, I accept the irony of using this word, momentum. And again, it may not be enough. They've got just about enough time to keep building, but they've also got enough time to trip themselves up.
Yeah, and I think that that's really important, is that when you take party conferences in isolation, you have a group of politicians mainly talking to their own supporters.
But sorry to interrupt, but that's really important, because for a number of years, the Labour Party supporter base and the activist base was really miserable.
Yeah,
and that really matters going into an election. And
from what
I can tell, it's the Conservative Party activist base and supporter base that's pretty miserable at the moment.
Yeah, they really are. And they were pretty miserable earlier this year at the local elections, let me tell you. It's not a new thing. I think party conferences, yes, they do have that. You need to rally the troops. You need to get them excited. Right. You want them to come out and help. And also, if you're an extremely good speaker, you will then speak to the rest of the country. And I think that bit is lacking in both parties, if I'm brutally honest. You don't see that from either Rishi Sunak or Keir Starmer. You don't see that natural, I can speak to the rest of the country, I can speak to an individual in Bolton, Bexley, wherever it may be. And I think that's a real skill of politicians. And at the moment, it just feels like two sort of quite capable bank managers.
I confess I'm trying. I can't quite remember a killer line from either speech. I think I said it last show. I didn't actually sit down and watch Rishi Sunak's, but there didn't seem to be a soundbite that came out of that. And I can't remember a distinctive line.
No, and we seem to have moved away from that three-word slogan, the very American.
Oh, thank goodness.
Absolutely, thank goodness. But unfortunately, if you lose the snappiness, I can't really remember. Both conference slogans were quite long for both parties, and I'm not entirely sure that I remember it well enough. It didn't stick with you, and unfortunately, that's why those three-word slogans work. Is that everybody will then remember it.
Yeah.
And unless you have that instant recognition, I think it's a different way of looking at politics. So we've moved away from the very sort of Trump-esque, Boris-esque leadership.
Get Brexit done.
Absolutely. Build a wall, make America great again. I mean, everybody remembers those, whether you agree with it or not. And now we're coming back to politics that we used to have, which is we want to look at policy, we want to look at detail. And it doesn't give you those kind of the same headlines or the same feeling about something. So I think that I think it's just a change in politics that we haven't seen for maybe 4 or 5 years, but it is a politics that we've had in the past.
Mm. I think there could be little doubt that in various ways it was Labour that quote unquote won conference seasons. Again, I don't know how that translates to the real world. I expect not all that much. What I do think is that if Labour, let's put it this way, I think if Labour had a disastrous conference, that would have mattered.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And I think sometimes just getting through it without any major trip ups, you have got through the whole thing, you've said what you want to say, people have behaved, you've rallied your troops, you've had the good attendance. I think for political party terms, that's kind of all you need to do.
Yeah.
And now all parties, and that includes the Liberal Democrats, have to put their messaging together in a way that is going to sell it to the country. And that's a kind of the natural progression after a conference, is politics then has to begin, because you aren't very far from an election. So you have to then coalesce around whatever your policies are going to be to sell that to the country, because that is your important part.
And let's be very clear. What for the Labour Party to wake up on the first day of their conference to find Israel under attack, to find a war escalating in the Middle East, was a huge test for them. I cannot even bear to think what would have happened 4, 5, 6 years ago if that had happened with Corbyn and McDonnell at the head of the Labour Party. And they did not. Okay, we saw some. There was a few little fracas outside conference, weren't there? Let's be clear. Sir Keir Starmer was unequivocal. David Lammy has been unequivocal, and that was a real test for them. And I have been brutal on the Labour Party for what happened under the Corbyn years with anti-Semitism. I've been pretty brutal on Sir Keir Starmer for staying on that front bench. But this weekend, they could have messed that up, and they were very clear. And the point is, we didn't end up talking about it with the Labour Party, and they managed a very difficult situation very calmly without any escalation of the anti-Semitism, of the equivocation, of any of the traps that they could have stepped into that weekend.
And quite interestingly, just on that point, there was a really good interview with Keir Starmer where he was asked about his relationship with Rishi Sunak. Uh-huh. And he said that when Rishi became prime minister, there was a phone call between the two leaders, and that they would agree to do politics properly and fairly, and all's fair in love and politics. However, when it came down to national security, they would absolutely be on the same side.
Yes.
And I think that is what we've seen. And I'm so incredibly grateful that you have Sir Keir Starmer as leader of the Labour Party, because you're right. If it was Corbyn and McDonnell, I think that we would be in.
This is a really difficult segue to finish up the show, so I apologise. You've also broken one of my very, very important rules. You've been an NIMBY, and the most important rule I have is no Christmas until December. No. This is not acceptable. Claire, it is Friday the 13th of October, and you want to talk to me about Christmas lights. This is an outrage.
I do. And do you know what? I'm normally the person, when everyone else is putting up their Christmas tree, who is still saying, no, I'm not doing it. Christmas is in December, and, you know, the second week of December at that. So,
oh, blimey. I'm for a mince pie 1st of December.
Yeah, so you have to get my son's birthday out of the way at the beginning of November before I can even consider anything to do with Christmas. But this is quite interesting that people are starting to look at council finances and realising that if a council has no money or goes bust or is looking like it might go bust, then the things that we all seemingly take for granted, which are nice, like twinkly lights at Christmas in the high street, are going to go, because surprisingly someone has to pay for them.
Yes.
And
has to pay for the D-list celebrity to turn them on. And
Well, quite, you know, and that's what we all have had over the years. So I just thought it was sort of quite an interesting way that you could perhaps look at finances to the council, how much we pay in council tax and what they have to spend it on. But also, surely this is much more for community groups and community spirit and people coming together, rather than spending council taxpayers' money. How about communities rally together? And I see it in my village, and I'm always really impressed. I live in quite a small village in North Kent, and we have a local flower and plant person who donates a tree every single year to the village shopping centre, and he decorates it because he says that's his part of giving for Christmas. That is his offering. And then the local community, we have a social group in the village, and they've arranged a sleigh ride around the village so that children can see Santa. And it's all beautifully done, and carols by the Christmas tree. And of course, these things take volunteers' time, but they don't cost cold hard cash. So I think that let's get back to what the spirit of Christmas actually is, rather than the over-consumerism which tends to lead the season. What about the community spirit, volunteering, and just generally going out there and being nice to people?
This is all very Cameroonian of you.
You see, I do. That's that one nation are coming out,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. Well, actually, you've set me up nicely for the final story, because we do have to discuss, and I slightly overlooked it when we were talking about conference season. But there has been a win for Rishi Sunak this week. He's had a win. He's got a new MP. He's got a defection of Lisa Cameron, Dr. Lisa Cameron, who's gone from, and I'm not making this up, I'm going to say this sentence. Lisa Cameron has moved from the SNP to the Conservatives. That's the Scottish Nationalist Party to the Conservative and Unionist Party.
And I think the very best thing about this is the outrage from the SNP.
Always.
And it really is. And they are absolutely disgusted. And they think, you know, independence is everything. Whereas she's saying, well, hold up a second. You're not supportive of the politicians that you have in the Westminster Party for the SNP. She has said about the toxic nature of the party.
She was very outspoken.
Very outspoken. And her mental health has suffered enormously. And to want to leave a party like the SNP when you are Scottish and when you look after a constituency in Scotland, to move to the Conservatives is brave.
That is one word.
And I like Lisa Cameron. I think that she is incredibly clever. She does a lot around disability rights and she's very, very thoughtful. But I can't imagine the grief that she is going to get now on a daily basis for having done this. And I noticed that her social media has been taken down. So I suspect that she is having an awful lot of abuse given to her. I don't think anybody needs to celebrate this. I think this is a really sad indictment of the nature of politics, the bullying, the toxicity. I think that needs to be addressed. And I think that she is only one of many who have considered changing parties. And that is a really bold move to come to the Conservatives. And then to end up on the Conservative benches opposite your previous colleagues is going to be really, really difficult.
Yeah. And we should say that from all the reports that are coming out, it was Rishi Sunak himself, the Prime Minister, who sealed this deal, which, you know, we, as I say, criticised him a lot for different things. But obviously he has some kind of one-to-one personal touch that has got something like this over the line. So a bit of a win for him to end a difficult couple of weeks. Claire, it's been such a pleasure having you on. We'll have to grab you back at another point. Tell people where they can keep up with you and everything you get up to.
You can find me on Twitter, X, Claire_Pearsall, and you'll see all of the media appearances I tend to do about immigration, and it's not your traditional conservative view, so please don't be put off.
No, keep up with Claire. Anyway, you can engage in some robust debate, even if people disagree with you. I'm at Charlotte A. Henry or at Char A. Henry across social media. I would love you to head over to newsletter.theedition.net and sign up. There'll also, as always, be a link to Emma's Substack newsletter, A Hard Thinking on the Soft Left, in the show notes, so go join her there. We would always love to hear from you at HOC Podcast on Twitter as well. So do please keep up with that. Let us know what topics you want us to discuss and so on. And we will see you all next week.